You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for June 19th, 2015. This week, I'm going to talk about out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, trans fats, a secret tool for high blood pressure treatment, Watchman, and pulmonary embolism. First up is cardiac arrest survival. Surviving cardiac arrest depends a lot on where it happens. For instance, in the United States, cities like Rochester, Minnesota, and Seattle, Washington boast much better survival than cities like Louisville, Kentucky, and in fact, most cities. The key, obviously, is speed, early intervention. Two Swedish studies published in the New England Journal of Medicine recently looked at the question of early bystander CPR. In the first study, researchers performed a clinical trial of a smartphone app in which they looked at an app which directed CPR-trained individuals to the site of the cardiac arrest. And they found that early CPR was increased by 14% in the group that had the smartphone app. In the second study, researchers looked at more than 30,000 charts and out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, and they asked the question, did early bystander CPR before paramedics got there make a difference? And they found that the answer was yes, it did. Survival was twofold greater if early bystander CPR was initiated. I mentioned these two studies because this is an incredible opportunity to improve the public health. Surviving out-of-hospital cardiac arrest can get better. I'd like to tell you about an example of that. In Louisville, my partner, Dr. Bill Dillon, who's an interventional cardiologist, along with his wife, Sally, have started a nonprofit foundation called Start the Heart Foundation. And check this idea out. They're taking pre-med students who are motivated, young, and energetic to actually go out and teach in the public. They teach the pre-med students CPR, and then the students go out into the schools. And they're primarily interested in teaching every student in Louisville, Kentucky, bystander CPR. They're also focusing on underserved areas where cardiac arrest survival is even lower. These two studies in the New England Journal provide a strong evidence base for efforts such as these. And I mention this, and I love this story, because it combines good old-fashioned humanity with smartphone apps and new age technology, all to serve the greater good. Next up is the trans fat story. This week, the FDA announced that food makers must remove partially hydrogenated oils from processed food over the next 3 years. Dr. Walter Willett is a Harvard nutritionist and epidemiologist who has been on this since the very beginning and is a leader in the field. He told HeartWire on Medscape that this was absolutely the right decision. Trans fats are dangerous. They're harmful. They increase LDL, lower LDL, and incite inflammation. And Dr. Willett told a NewsHour program last night that the trans fats are, quote, metabolically toxic. I think this is a good story. It's good news. But my question is, what took so long? And I'm afraid that if you dig into this problem and why it happened, what was the delay, you'll find that industry-based conflicts of interest between industry-based scientists and epidemiologists features prominently. And that's not good, because it undermines the public trust in mainstream medicine. So the teaching point here is not that trans fats are bad. We know that. The teaching point is how this happened, why it happened, and what can we do to better recognize bias and conflict of interest going forward in the future. Next up is pharmacist-led high blood pressure control. That's right, that's not a mistake. High blood pressure, we know, is a huge public health issue. Good blood pressure control leads to better outcomes and lower costs overall. But yet, one in three North American patients have inadequate blood pressure control. That's unnecessary. Blood pressure control is doable. It's not rocket science. It just matters if we want to control it. If we try, we can. So a group of researchers in Canada, Alberta, Canada, looked at a clinical trial of whether independently prescribing pharmacists could help in the matter. That's right, pharmacists, not doctors. And they found, yes, it could, a resounding yes. The group randomized patients with high blood pressure to either pharmacist-led control or typical control where doctors and pharmacists played their usual roles. And they found that pharmacist-led management led to an 18-point drop in systolic blood pressure over 6 months. And target blood pressure was twofold more likely to occur in the pharmacist-led group. I find this striking data with huge implications. These were community-based pharmacists that were acting independently. And this data is not new, and it's not unique. There are prior studies which show similar things. It's not an outlier. And I ask you to imagine if renal denervation or a new drug reduced systolic blood pressure by 18 points in 6 months. So I mention this, I'm drawn to this because I believe that healthcare in the United States would get a lot better, a lot faster, if we were able to let go of these physician-centric models of healthcare, and that others can help, certainly this is evidence for that. Next up is WATCHMAN. A meta-analysis of the WATCHMAN trials was published this week in JACC. Researchers were led by Dr. David Holmes, and they looked at the PROTECT-AF, PREVAIL, CAP, and CAP2 registries. The results were not unexpected. In the primary endpoint, which was stroke, systemic embolism, or cardiovascular death, there was no significant differences in the groups. WATCHMAN was found to be non-inferior to warfarin. In the combined analysis where they looked at the two clinical trials, PROTECT and PREVAIL, they found that both groups had a stroke rate under 2%, 1.75 in WATCHMAN and 1.87 with warfarin, so no difference. Cardiovascular death was reduced significantly in the WATCHMAN-treated groups, but overall death rate was not. And bleeding not related to the initial procedure was also reduced in the WATCHMAN group. And there was an interesting difference in stroke types. That is, if you look at ischemic strokes, it seems to be more in the WATCHMAN group, and there was less hemorrhagic stroke with the WATCHMAN group. And when the researchers added the CAP and CAP2 registries to the total meta-analysis, there was no difference in the results. So I looked at the discussion section of this paper. I looked at the whole paper, but the discussion section is remarkable because it's paragraph after paragraph of persuasion of the benefits of WATCHMAN. But the editorialists in JACC were not convinced at all. Dr. Jonathan Wax and Warren Manning from Beth Israel were clear and strong in their cautionary note. They noted an increase in ischemic strokes in beyond a year in the WATCHMAN group. They also made light of the fact that they made it known that NOACs had been proven superior to warfarin. And they even subtitled their editorial, listen to this, Pay Now or Possibly Pay Later. So my comments on this, that I found the difference in the author's views and the editorialist's view to be strikingly opposite. I'm concerned about WATCHMAN. I will admit that there are patients with difficult times with anticoagulation. I have a patient, for instance, who bleeds every time he has warfarin, and I think WATCHMAN may be useful in patients like this. But they are unusual and, in my opinion, not numerous amounts of patients like this. In addition, I also will recognize that future generations of WATCHMAN, including better sheaths, more flexible sheaths, better devices, will lead to better outcomes of the initial procedure and easier device placement. But that said, left atrial appendage occlusion remains a focal solution for a systemic disease that is stroke. And I hope that my cardiology colleagues are cautious and are careful here, because I may be wrong about this, but I am worried that history will not look favorably on this procedure. Finally, pulmonary embolism. My colleague Seth Bilazarian posted a very nice video blog on a team-based interventional approach for patients with suspected PE. He visited the Mass General Hospital to look at their PERT protocol, which is a pulmonary embolism response team. And of course, Mass General has a massive amount of resources they can respond with. But Seth argues, and I think he's right, that PE mortality can be reduced if we approach it more like STEMI care. And I think that treating problems like acute PE, acute problems that need action, is a place where modern medicine can really shine. And I love this feature. I loved Seth's work on this because it so prominently includes a team approach to healthcare. So that's it for this week in cardiology. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from the Heart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from the Heart.org on Medscape.